everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's July 2024, and this is episode 403, which is a spoiler-filled conversation about the movie in theaters now called Twisters. Today's guest is Cole Burgett. He is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. He teaches systematic theology and Bible exposition classes and writes extensively about theology and popular culture. So today, we just have a discussion on the film Twisters. We are not publishing any accompanying film review article with this, so I hope you enjoy this extra bonus type of episode just about us talking about the film Twisters. Cole, it's good to have you back on the podcast.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
Well, this is another episode, like one recently, that we are doing without an article, but we wanted to cover this film for you because it's become the blockbuster film of the summer, besides Inside Out 2. And so we want to talk about Twisters today, plural, because maybe some of you saw the original film, Twister, almost 30 years ago, which came out back in 1996. So if you haven't gone to the Cineplex lately, this is one that's quite popular, and it's in theaters now. So I wanted to ask Cole, before we begin talking about the film, let's hear an overview about the film Twisters.
Sure. So like you mentioned, it's I don't really know how to, I wouldn't call it a sequel, because that sort of implies a tighter continuity.
Maybe it's a standalone, like related.
Yeah, it's I guess the best way to describe it is a continuation. It's a continuation of that original film back in 1996, I think it was, called Twister, which was sort of a popular film in its time, had Bill Paxton in it. I think Shania Twain did one of the songs for the film that was also very popular. This film, Twisters, with the S on the end, it's a bit of a clever way to do a continuation, follows this new character named Kate Cooper. Kate is a storm chaser who, in her, I guess, college years, is an amateur tornado chaser, storm chaser, with a group of friends. I mean, this isn't so much spoiler territory because this is sort of the setup of the movie, and you can kind of glean it from the trailers. She sort of gets in the way of this tornado with these friends who think they know what they're doing, don't fully know what they're doing, and it goes wrong. So some years pass, and she is sort of lured back to Tornado Alley with this friend from college who is spent some time in the military, has come across some new, you know, tracking technology that's quite groundbreaking for storms and things like that. And she gets lured back into the fold. And while she's there, she crosses paths. And this is, you know, the character who's sort of advertised in the trailers is this reckless sort of cowboy character. Played by Glenn Powell, who is all over everything now. It seems this is
like the year of Glenn Powell.
Yes. This guy is sort of shaping up to be maybe the next iteration of what you might think of as the classic movie stars, right? You often
kind of like a sequel to Tom Cruise, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of hear it said, you know, there's no such thing as movie stars in Hollywood anymore, that, you know, Tom Cruise is sort of the last of them. But the way this guy has now gleaned all of this cultural cash in such a short amount of time, you kind of wonder if he's shaping up to be that. So this character that he plays is this character who advertises himself as a tornado wrangler, which is quite funny. And he's kind of charming, but he's also very, very reckless. And he makes his living as essentially a streamer, a social media streamer who streams these, you know, storm chasing adventures. And, you know, Kate initially is, you know, looking at this guy like, this dude has no clue what he's doing. And he's taking huge risks, kind of like, you know, she used to. But as the movie goes on, you realize that they actually kind of balance each other quite well, and that he's not as not quite as dumb as she originally casts him to be. And, you know, the movie sort of unfolds with them getting to know each other and being some light, you know, romance elements there as they chase these storms and ultimately end up, you know, dealing with quite a powerful tornado. So there are ideas from the first film in there, particularly with using technology and things like that to track tornadoes, to study tornadoes, which really function as almost like a mystery device, which I think is interesting, and then ultimately to disrupt one to save lives. So ideas from the first one in there, but a very much a standalone, I think is probably a good way to say it, continuation of that original film.
So you mentioned, and we talked about the fact that it's in the universe of, not quite a sequel, so different characters than the original film of almost 30 years ago, Twister. So how does this particular film connect to the original film, and do you think it's a film that Christians can see?
Yeah, so the movie doesn't, as we said, have any sort of overt connection in the way that you would think. For example, there are no, I guess what you'd call legacy characters, right? Legacy characters are a big thing now. And honestly, you know, had you, if you didn't title this movie Twisters, but called it something else, it could almost function as a completely separate thing, a what you might think of as a spiritual sequel than anything else. But there are little nods through lines of dialogue and things like that to that original film. I was actually reading an interview with Mark L. Smith, one of the writers, and he sort of clarified early on. I think this article was from back in December that I was reading this on CBR, and he said that the idea for the sequel came from an idea that the original Twister director and this writer had come up with, and so they, it was sort of a pitch that was sent, and they sort of came up with the idea to do another movie like Twister. And that was sort of the original iteration of the thing. And it originally did have the characters of Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt from that first film. It did have, I think, their daughter or something like that, who was the protagonist or something like that. And then once the director, the new director, which would be Lee Isaac Chung, came in, he sort of made it his own thing, and I think separated a little more from the original. And that's okay. I mean, I think everybody is probably aware that Bill Paxton passed away back in 2017. Bill Paxton, Twister is probably one of the more well-known films. He was in Tombstone as Morgan Earp. He was in Apollo 13. And I think he was actually nominated for a Primetime Emmy and a Screen Actors Guild Award for his portrayal of Randall McCoy in that History Channel miniseries, Hatfields and McCoys. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but it was very popular back in the day. And I think Bill Paxton was also in Titanic. So Bill Paxton was a fairly well-known name about 10 years ago, and even 15 years ago was pretty popular. So kind of hard to do a sequel in a true sense in light of his passing. But as it stands, I think it works well. As far as it being a movie that Christians can see, yes, actually. I actually saw this film with my mother, and I'm usually very cagey about taking people to see films, but she was visiting. We had the time, and I had watched the original. I remember it being a film that she had seen. I remember actually owning the DVD in our house when I was a kid. And we actually walked out of the theater and she remarked, she said, you know, that was actually a really good movie. She really liked it. And I mentioned, I think that there's some light chemistry between the two main characters. However, there is no overt sexuality in this film. The language is kept to a minimum. And I think any language that is used is appropriate in the scenes that it's using. Nothing really struck me as gratuitous in this film. In fact, you could argue that the film probably plays it a little too safe given the subject matter, which is a lot of, you know, wanton destruction. But what it made was really sort of a classic summer blockbuster. There's nothing really out to compete with this film right now. It is doing extremely well at the box office. One could say shockingly so, given the overall lackluster performance at the box office this year. But it's a very clean film. It's a classic summer blockbuster with very pretty people in the lead roles. It has outstanding special effects. Normally I gripe a lot about special effects versus practical effects. This movie seems to make both work extremely well together. I was really impressed with the special effects for the tornadoes. I actually have a friend who is a filmmaker, and he and his family went and saw it, actually just before I did. And I was kind of waiting to get some feedback before I went and saw it, because I'll be honest, I wasn't completely sold on the trailers. And he actually came back and raved about it. He said it was a great movie. He was blown away by the special effects. He said they looked shockingly good. You know, we're so used to that. So smooth, it's unreal.
Over CGI, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And this, he said, you know, didn't really have that. He made great use of the special effects, and the tornadoes looked fantastic. And he said, you know, see it on the biggest screen possible. So that's what we did. We went and saw it in Dolby with the surround sound. And it was a great film-going experience. And that's worth pointing out, because if you are considering seeing this film, I would definitely say this is one to see in a theater. And not necessarily at home. I feel like the at-home experience would not be as, unless you have, you know, your house rigged for sound, would sort of detract from just the fun of seeing this movie in the theaters. And it is one that, you know, it may be intense for real young viewers. In fact, when we walked into the theater, the couple next to us had what had to be a 6 or 7 year old kid there, and initially we were thinking, oh my gosh, why would you bring a kid to this? But then once the movie went, you know, the kid's not going to pick up on everything, but you know, he didn't, you know, run out screaming or anything like that. So it does seem like to be a movie for the family, if that makes sense as well. And it has some nice, this is another thing I talked about with my filmmaker friend. It doesn't pander in the sense that it doesn't go for the lowest hanging fruit. And I won't spoil this, even because it's the very last shot of the film. But there are lots of little clever things like this where it would be, where in any other movie like this, right? You get to that last scene and you're like, oh, okay, so this is finally going to happen. And then there's this clever little twist where what you're expecting doesn't happen. And then the credits roll. And it's little things like that. It makes the movie feel not just like a classic blockbuster, but it feels a little smarter than the average blockbuster. And it's very invested in its characters, which is a plus. So yeah, I think it's certainly a film Christians can see, and certainly a family with, you know, kids 13 and up. Sure.
Back in 2010, in our print magazine, we published an article called Television as the New Literature, Understanding and Evaluating the Medium. And the point of that article, while it was dealing with television, really speaks to why we do so many film reviews and TV series reviews for The Christian Apologist. And that is because this article noted that our culture has largely shifted from print to visual entertainment. And really, films and television are the new literature. And the average American spends many hours every day watching television and films. As a matter of fact, back in 2010, there were not the streaming options that there are today on multiple platforms, not to mention all of the films that are in the theaters. And some of them do have breakthroughs, like Twisters as being one of the most popular movies of the summer of 2024. And so we want to bring you this content, and we have more film coverage coming up from the Postmodern Realities podcast. And so you might be listening to this because you are a film buff. So I just want to let you know something else that we're covering this summer is the latest film from M. Night Shyamalan called Trap. And he's been making films for a long time, all the way back to some of his most iconic films, including Sixth Sense and Signs. And also back is another film in the Alien series called Alien Romulus. And Aliens has been going on since the very first iconic film in the late 1970s. So that's 40 years that it's been going on. So we want to bring you the latest in these series and help you think critically and as a Christian about all these films, because most people who are not Christians and even other Christians are watching these films and television series, and we want to be able to have you understand how those stories that are being told can point us to the bigger story and the true story, which is the gospel found in Scripture. So that's just kind of a brief overview of why we cover what we do, but also to say that all the stuff that you're getting, whether it's the Postmodern Realities podcast or our weekly free articles, sometimes more than one a week, on our website, equip.org, is that everything is completely free. We do not have a paywall. We no longer have paid subscriptions. So we ask that you consider partnering with us in one of two ways. One is to write us rating or review for the Postmodern Realities podcast on Apple Podcasts, because that's kind of the main aggregator for the internet where people go. If you could just please do that. We only have a couple for the entire year of 2024. And we have many thousands of people listening to this podcast. So please, if you haven't already, go do that and help us out in that way. That helps us with the algorithm. That helps other people find this content when they're looking around and searching for new podcasts to listen to. And then the other thing is, if you would be willing to consider giving us a tip, like $5 or $10 for all this free content, please go to equip.org. Go to Journal, then click on Postmodern Realities, and at any of the landing pages, you will find there a link to give us a tip. Well, now, back to my conversation with Cole Burgett about the film Twisters. Well, I would agree with your assessment. I definitely think if you have middle school kids or above, this is a film they could see. I think the only caution is a little bit of language and, you know, major storm damage. But besides that, it is quote unquote clean. And there's a hint of romance, but there isn't anything shown or any romance really. So what do you think makes this particular kind of film interesting to filmgoers? You know, the big disaster films that we used to get of the end of the world type of thing isn't as big as it used to be. And we're more in the superhero era, I guess, of big blockbuster films. But even within those kind of big, you know, the end of the world kind of films that are usually released in the summer, Twister and now this standalone quote unquote sequel, Twisters, is a little bit different from those. And what makes them different?
Yeah, this is sort of interesting to think about. Genre studies is one of my areas of fascination, especially when it comes to film. And one of the things, a genre that has fascinated me from the time that I was young, is this genre of movie. I don't even know if you would call it a subgenre. I guess it would be a subgenre of maybe action adventure, but you could also have horror thriller in there. I mean, it just kind of depends. Is this thing we call the disaster film or the disaster movie. And the whole plot device is some type of ongoing disaster. These movies generally have a similar kind of plot, and you can see it in Twisters as well. There is some degree of buildup of this sense of impending doom. The disaster itself, usually the characters in the middle of the disaster and then a little bit in the aftermath. And these types of films very frequently feature a large cast of actors. And I would say Twisters is a lot of, it has two primary characters, but it actually has a lot of other characters as well. There are a lot of characters in this movie. And all of them, I will say, with quite well-formed personalities for being a larger cast. There are some lesser-known character actors in Twisters who all do a very good job. The characters are very memorable, which is, you know, it's a point for the actors, a point for the writers, and it's just a point for the film in general. But these movies usually have a large cast of characters. There will be multiple plot lines. Usually it leads up to characters attempting to either completely avert or escape from the disaster, whatever it may be. The genre came to prominence. It became real popular in the 70s. You had a whole slew of these types of disaster films in the 1970s. So I think you even had two in the year 74. I think you had The Towering Inferno and then Earthquake.
Earthquake, I've seen it.
Uh-huh. And then in 72, there was the very popular The Poseidon Adventure. The Poseidon Adventure is probably one of the more well-known ones in this genre. It had Gene Hackman, Ernest Borgnine, Shelley Winters. It's the sinking of the Poseidon. And then back in 1970, and this, some people argue that this is the film that started the genre, the film Airport, which had Burt Lancaster and Dean Martin in it. So the 70s, you know, popularized this. And over the next 20 years or so, you saw the growing of this genre. And it all sort of culminated in what for many people is the greatest film ever made, which is Titanic. In 1997, Titanic.
I always think of things like all those space ones, like Armageddon.
Armageddon, yeah.
Day back when Will Smith was still okay.
Yep. Yeah, back when Will Smith was still okay. Yeah, you had all of those movies too that came out. Independence Day, and this is sort of in the 1990s, right? There was this revival stage, Deep Impact. Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones, one of my personal favorites, even though many people don't like it, was Dante's Peak with Pierce Brosnan and Linda Hamilton. I've watched that film more times than I can count. So there's a whole genre of these types of movies out there. And Twister, which was part of that 1990s revival, sort of brought the genre back to the fore a little bit later on. And it's interesting to me that the people are attracted to this, but it would make sense for why, right? If you're going to a movie theater to see something you've never seen before, or to genuinely be thrilled, as it were, there are very few films that are better suited to that than the disaster film genre. The disaster movie makes eminent use of special effects, cutting edge use of special effects. And it generally, you know, has some type of bankable star attached. You know, in the 90s, when Dante's Peak came out, you know, Pierce Brosnan was James Bond. I mean, that's where you saw Brosnan on the screen was as Bond. And then suddenly he's in this disaster film as the scientist. It's a place to see, you know, like I said, pretty people. And it's the quintessential blockbuster type of film. So it's sort of tailor-made to attract audiences. And as far as what makes Twisters a little different and why people are showing up, there's a couple of reasons, I think. One, simply because we really haven't had a good disaster movie for a hot minute. The last one, and I'm shooting from the hip here, but the last one that I think I saw, I think was called Skyscraper. And I don't even know if you would call that a disaster film. That was more of an action adventure film with The Rock, of all people. He plays this FBI agent who is inside this, you know, really high-end top of the line building in the world. It's not the Burj Khalifa. It's actually set in Hong Kong in this movie, but the building is set on fire. And so he's sort of navigating his way through this collapsing massive building. But again, I don't even know if it was a disaster film. I mean, it was considered to be almost a spiritual sequel, a spiritual successor to the 1974 disaster film, The Towering Inferno, because the plots are so similar. But this one had a lot more action in it. If I'm not mistaken, it did not do so well at the box office. It had a fairly minimal gross back in 2018. So something wasn't clicking, not in the way that Twisters is. What I think is helping Twisters is the fact that there really isn't much out this summer by way of big blockbusters. I think in the superhero camp, you and I mentioned this just before we started, there's Deadpool, but that is a hard R film. And traditionally, these big blockbusters are PG-13 movies that it would be okay to take, the older kids to see. And there aren't really a ton of those movies out right now. So Twisters doesn't really have a lot of competition. And it's certainly the one to go to the movie theater for if you want the big effects and the true, theatrical experience. If you want to see what can we do with movies in 2024, this is a good indicator of that. So even within the disaster film genre, Twister and Twisters sort of carves out its own little niche. Not many movies are happening about tornadoes. It's a very unique phenomenon to focus a movie on. And I was reading actually an interview with Glenn Powell, who is one of the stars of this film. And one of the things he mentioned, I'm not going to try to quote him directly because I'll butcher it, but he was basically making the point that as a producer, if you're looking at what's going to connect with an audience, and you see that there is a dearth of films in a particular genre, or if the marketing team is telling you that a particular genre or subgenre doesn't make money and isn't in, so no one's making a movie about it. He said, to him, that comes across as untapped potential. And I think he's quite right about that. There's a niche audience out there who would like a movie like this. And I think the box office is proving him quite right.
Well, one of the things that this film focuses on kind of current day is the subculture of storm chasing. I mean, there might have been storm chasing way back in the day, but because of the internet wasn't really huge 30 years ago. There is a whole new subculture of people trying to do different, not just storms, but they try to go do extreme sports or do extreme kind of climb certain mountains that are not climbable or different things. And they all make a living of doing some of this stuff on YouTube. And that's one of the kind of the characters in this film, somebody who is a storm chaser. Now, I did think it was interesting in preparing for our discussion that there was a guy, he's actually a photojournalist, and he is kind of a storm disaster chaser guy. And he takes pictures of tornadoes, and they used one of them in the film. So for the film poster, viewers might think, hey, that's just computer generated. Actually, it's not. He is a photojournalist, and that's actually his photo of a real life twister. So I thought that was interesting. But tell us a little bit about this phenomenon, which seems very American to me. And I think it also brought the Midwest as almost a character into this film. I don't think most people think of the Midwest or Tornado Alley and all those kinds of things. But what can you tell us about the subculture and how the film portrays it and kind of what it's all about?
Yeah, this is really fascinating. And I think you're absolutely right that this is a uniquely American phenomenon. And in this film, and specifically with tornadoes in particular, Tornado Alley is almost a character. And you're right. For those who don't know, Tornado Alley is really sort of loosely defined. But it's this location that spans the central United States up into Canada, where tornadoes are most frequent. And these areas range from states like Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, South Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, maybe even parts of Louisiana. there's this just range through these states and really others, if you want to broaden the borders to places like Illinois and Indiana, Missouri, all of these sort of central U.S. states where tornadoes occur. And this phenomenon known as storm chasing, which again is also uniquely American. Storm chasing is defined by climatologist Bill Reed. Bill Reed says that a storm chaser is someone who makes an effort to go somewhere, to be at the right place at the right time, to see a spectacular cloud structure, lightning displays, tornadoes, or hurricanes. It is someone who has a passion for weather and wants to see Mother Nature do its thing. Again, quite a unique phenomenon when you think about it. It actually still comes across as very strange to me to think that people make a living doing that. And, you know, there's a whole science to it. And in order to sort of better understand it in preparation for this interview, I actually learned some things. I was doing some research into the history of storm chasing. How did this start? And my gut suspicion was that this became popular in America. And I was right. The first person, supposedly, to gain real public recognition as a storm chaser was a guy who was chasing storms throughout North Dakota in 56, I believe. It was the 50s for sure. I do know that. And he did this by gathering data and sort of studying it. It was data gathered from local weather offices and airports. And he pioneered storm chasing as we think of it today. And he ended up founding this magazine called Storm Track. He was the founder and first editor. Storm Track was in circulation from 77 until 2002. And it was just a magazine about storm chasing. David Hoadley was this guy's name. And he was, from what I understand, the primary writer, and you know, it was his pictures that were in the magazine and stuff like that. Once you get into the 70s, really it looked like it was the University of Oklahoma that was working with the National Severe Storms Laboratory, began what they called the Tornado Intercept Project. And that was in 1972. It was the first large-scale tornado chasing activity to be sponsored by some type of, you know, formal institution. And supposedly in 1973, when the tornado hit Union City, Oklahoma, they had great success. They ended up laying a foundation for what's called morphology, supercell morphology, that turned out to be, you know, really efficient for storm chasing in the fields. And this sort of led to the Storm Track magazine being created. It brought the idea of storm chasing to the public conscience. And the tracking of the storm chasing phenomenon in popular culture, right, what brings it into households, occurred generally in three major spurts. This is sort of my understanding of these events. In 78, there was a television program called In Search Of. Some people may remember it. In Search Of was a television series that aired from 77 to 82 and was devoted to a very mysterious phenomenon. Now, we in other podcasts have briefly touched on, you know, the ancient astronauts theory, things like that. In Search Of, to some degree, brought that stuff to the public for it as well. But there was an episode that dealt with tornadoes and sort of introduced storm chasing. Then again, in 1985, there was a documentary episode of the PBS series Nova that dealt with it. And then, of course, in 1996, the movie Twister with Bill Paxton comes out. And that is, it's obviously, you know, it's a movie, it's heavily fictionalized. But, you know, what better way to bring the subgenre, if you will, to the front of the public conscious, to the surface of the public conscious, than to make a movie about it? And that's what they did. So that's sort of a loose overview of this subculture of storm chasing. You know, I'm not an expert, and I'm sure there's a lot of literature out there you can pick up and read. That's just sort of my quick overview of the thing. But again, very uniquely American phenomenon, has a lot to do with the central United States, the Midwest, the states that we mentioned. And it seems like it's quite the adrenaline rush would be the way to say it.
Well, I will say that in my research for this article, because one of the main characters that's played by Glenn Powell is this kind of cowboy-like character who is a YouTube storm chaser, but there is an actual meteorologist that has over 1 million followers on YouTube who does chase storms. I was reading about him and what he does, you know, through the New York Times, and his name is Reed Timmer, if anyone's interested in that. And he also is almost 1 million on Instagram as well, but he does tornadoes, hurricanes, flash floods, severe storms, snowstorms, and things like that. And he just goes around the country seeking these things out, which seems kind of crazy that you would like want to go into that, but that's what he does as a meteorologist, kind of documenting all these things, and people really find it fascinating to kind of go on those really major, I guess, storm chasing runs with him, and they don't have to be there. It's kind of like seeing it on TV. Well, this was really kind of interesting in this current film, Twisters, and they talked about how tornadoes are formed, and they do mention kind of that what is behind it in more of a religious way. And I want to connect this back to talking to people about how to even think about this in terms of cultural apologetics. And as we know, if you read your insurance rider on your home or car or something like that, it'll say things that are not covered, acts of God. And why we still refer to some of these natural phenomenon as acts of God, whether they be an earthquake, you talked about the movie Earthquake, or any one of these things where it's floods, severe floodings, hurricanes, tornadoes. So what do you make of that in this film? It really does focus on the human characters, but I feel like the Twisters themselves are also a character. How does it incorporate ideas of something causing it? I mean, there are scientists that are pursuing this, but what is it saying about quote unquote acts of God?
Yeah, this is such an interesting question. And I want to say it in two ways. On one level, I don't want to overstate this and say this is what this movie is about, because it's really not. As you noted, the movie is really about the human characters, and it tells quite a good story in that regard. However, there is this line of dialogue in the film that is absolutely fascinating. And it is where it's a very, very cleverly edited scene. It seemed to me like it would be a nightmare to write this scene into a screenplay, but someone in the editing room got real clever. Where Kate and Tyler are sort of talking to their respective crews in their own, you know, lingo about what a tornado actually, like, well, we know what it is, but what causes it? And it's very clever because it's cutting back and forth between them and their dialogue. And they're almost sort of finishing each other's sentences, even though they're not even around each other. They're talking to their own crews. And one of the things that is sort of talked about is that there's actually a huge element of scientific mystery that no one can really pin down what is the, no pun intended, perfect storm of events that leads to a tornado actually forming and causes it to grow into this, you know, destructive force. And one of the things that the character of Tyler, played by Glenn Powell, notes is he says it's part science, part religion. And of course, he's alluding to that mysterious element there. It's talking about this mystery of the tornado. And in doing some research on this, because I was sort of, part of me didn't believe the people didn't know what caused tornadoes. So after the movie, I was sort of like hung up on that line. So I went back and I was doing some research. And it turns out there was an article published in Science News with Kevin Keller. I hope I'm pronouncing that the right way. K-E-L-L-E-H-E-R. Keller, I'm going with, who is a retired director from the Global Systems Laboratory at the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Earth System Research Laboratories. Goodness, what a title. Put that on a resume. this is the guy who worked as the technical consultant on the original 1996 film and spent more than 2 years as the consultant for the new film, Twisters. And this is actually what he has to say. So this will be a direct quote. It says, even after 30 years from the first movie to now, we really don't know exactly how tornadoes form. We know how the rotation starts in mid and upper level sections of the storm and works its way down to the surface. But we now know that that's not the whole story, which I thought was really sort of interesting. And that line in the film, you know, it's part science, part religion. There's that mysterious element to it. As you mentioned, if you are looking through law codes or anything like that, there's that element sometimes known as a natural disaster that is called an act of God, which ironically is something, you know, I think a lot of people today wouldn't necessarily call it that. It's not an act of God. It's some type of, you know, natural phenomenon. But there's that little idea that floats throughout this movie that there actually could be something there. There's a mysterious element to it that obviously is part of science we don't yet understand. But having that room for doubt and having that room for standing in the face of something that you do not completely comprehend or understand, and that something that you're standing in the face of, standing and looking at, is something that you absolutely cannot tame and you have no control over. What's interesting, and you know, you have to be very careful in talking about terms of cultural apologetics. You have to be very careful in trying to, you know, overly cram Jesus into a movie about tornadoes. But because of that little line, you actually sort of can, in some way, tie what the film is fundamentally about back to Scripture. Because we know in Scripture that things like natural disasters, by and large, are attributed to an act of God. You know, earthquakes, especially. And, you know, it always raises that question of God's goodness. Well, if God is good, how could he let something like this happen? And, you know, most of these natural disasters are a result of, you know, the laws of nature at work. And we know from Scripture that all facets of nature are even held together in Christ. We see that in Colossians chapter 1. But we also see elements where God will use a natural disaster as judgment against sin. You'll see this in the Old Testament in Deuteronomy 11 and Numbers 16. And you will also see this briefly mentioned in the New Testament in James chapter 5. So it is certainly a theological truism to say that even if not every natural disaster is God punishing, you know, individual sin, God certainly maintains control over these natural phenomena, could step in to prevent, could not step in to prevent, could cause in some contexts. And it really, that's where I think this film can go, right? If you're talking about cultural apologetics, how do we specifically address, you know, the question of, in some way, theodicy? It's a little different because it's a natural disaster and theodicy has to do more with particularly evil in the world. How could there be a God who allows this thing? Well, I think Paul's argument in Romans, and he is making an argument in Romans, I think his argument in Romans chapter 8 specifically could help us here, where he says in 19 through 21, the creation waits in eager expectation for the sons of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the glorious freedom of the children of God. To paraphrase, if you will, God allows the earth to reflect the consequences that sin has had on creation. As Paul says it in another way, that all of creation is groaning. It is looking for a redemption. And we would sort of categorize this theologically under the effects that sin had on the world, on the natural creation order in the world that we inhabit. Everything in creation is now subject to frustration. It is subject to decay. It is subject to death, really. And, I think some theologians would probably argue that sin is the ultimate cause of natural disasters, just as it is the cause of death, disease, and suffering. So while we can understand why natural disasters occur, what I think is harder for us is to understand why God allows certain ones to occur. You know, we've seen in recent years, very recent years, like the earthquake in Syria, the earthquake in Turkey, the tsunami in Asia that killed, literally hundreds of thousands. That's quite hard for, this is something I've learned teaching Bible. When we talk about these topics, especially, I've learned that for some reason, and maybe it's just the circles that I run in, but Americans really struggle to understand that these types of things occur. And I'm not talking tornadoes. I'm talking like a tsunami that kills hundreds of thousands of people. It's almost like that's something, when you talk about something like that, I've noticed that a lot of American Christians, and I think it's just because we're so much of this country is inland and isolated and that kind of stuff, and we're untouched by a lot of this stuff. It's almost like talking about, Pompeii, right? It's this archaic idea that, oh, that only happened way back in the day. But just, recently, in recent years, the deaths of so many people due to these natural disasters, it's still a thing that happens. Even in our very advanced, very modern, very scientifically minded world, there are still these things happen that render humans powerless. And it is quite a good means of keeping hubris in check. But I think the harder thing for us to understand is why God allows them to occur. Why would he allow that? Why would he allow hurricanes to destroy the homes of thousands and tornadoes to destroy the homes of thousands and things like that? I do think, like I said, it is a way of, in one sense, of keeping hubris in check. It absolutely shakes our confidence, our certainty in having this world nailed down and having this life nailed down. It forces us really to see and understand that life is quite fleeting, which I think Ecclesiastes would agree with. It forces us to think about eternity. Statistics have shown that churches are usually filled after disasters, as people realize, maybe there's something I'm missing here, and life is actually a very fleeting thing. So ultimately, I would say, with these natural disasters, what they do is they provide the church an opportunity to be the church. As simple as that. While we don't necessarily understand everything, and we don't necessarily have all the answers, I don't think it's ever given to the church to claim to have all the little answers to life's questions. What it is given to the church to do is to proclaim Jesus Christ and be Jesus Christ to the world. And these natural disasters, which this film makes the central focus, they're prime opportunities for the church to be the church on a large scale and to open its doors and to minister to people in the wake of these disasters. So, these things can cause people to reevaluate their priorities in life. And, if anybody has answers on that topic, well, that would be the church.
And I think this film does, I didn't see the original Twister, so I didn't know that I had spoilers or expectations going into Twisters. But one thing I noticed in the film is that they showed the devastation.
Yes.
They showed communities that, we think of it as this community on the news. Oh, there's another one just flattened. But they go into those places and actually, posit, shouldn't we help these people? And I do think one thing for the people who go through this, it does make them think about natural disasters in a way that we can't control them. I mean, that's part of the I guess, thesis of the film was like, well, I wish we could stop tornadoes, or what can we do to control them? But there's still that big question of how do we control the weather from wrecking people's lives and causing devastation? And so far, there hasn't been a definitive answer from science about how to control it.
Absolutely. I completely agree that those are key ideas to this movie. And it does provide the apologists some room to move and see this film and then talk with people about it. So, you know, who'd have thunk it? A movie about tornadoes you can get some mileage out of.
Well, now on a much lighter note, I guess you talked about different disaster movies that you've seen. And I don't know if disaster movies are lighter, but what is a classic disaster movie, if this is someone's first disaster movie, that you would recommend that they watch, just because now in summer we kind of like to watch those popcorn type of films?
Oh, goodness. If it's the first one. Okay, that's a fair question. Twister, the original Twister, is one I could say to watch. If you want to go classic, The Poseidon Adventure in 72, I think it was. But then again, you know, my personal favorite is Dante's Peak. That was the year of the volcanoes. I think it came out the same year as Volcano with Tommy Lee Jones. And I adore Tommy Lee Jones, but Dante's Peak is my vote for the better film.
Well, people can put that on their streaming watch list. I'm sure that's available to stream somewhere. Well, thank you for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 403 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. And today we had a conversation about the film in theaters now called Twisters, which has become a blockbuster hit for the summer of 2024. We do not have an accompanying film review article, so we hope you've enjoyed our discussion today with today's guest, Cole Burgett, who writes frequently about popular culture, television series, and films for the Christian Research Journal. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Handegraff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.